It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope that you've had a great Thanksgiving and a good Thanksgiving weekend. And now we move on to what is the beginning of the onset of winter across the Midwest, and we certainly know that we had a fall that was unlike many we've seen, and the supermoon changed all kinds of wildlife patterns, from deer to waterfowl. Everything that moves in the outdoors was impacted by the supermoon. It made hunting and fishing actually very different than it has been in previous years. But now we're through Thanksgiving, and certainly we know that snow is on the way. And what I want to talk about this morning is the election behind us. There is an opportunity to have a fundamental change in the natural resource management of America. And what I thought I would do is outline what I perceive to be the key issues confronting our country when it comes to the management of our natural resources. That includes everything from oil and gas to our national wildlife refuges, national forests, and so on. And this is an opportunity for a fundamental change from the way we have been managing our natural resources for quite a while. And while I'm not assigning blame to any one individual, because certainly that's not the case, we have gotten badly off track in our management of our national wildlife areas, our natural resources, and we have lost our vision, perhaps, as to what we should be doing with America's treasures. So the first thing I'd like to address are maybe what I think are the key issues, and hopefully you agree with me. And if you don't, that's part of what this show is all about, is we have a stimulating discussion, and it enables people to at least think about what maybe can be done. So the first thing is this discussion of the sale of federal lands. In the last 2 years, Congress has been in favor leaning in the direction of selling off what they consider to be excess federal lands to the states. In Illinois, we would say, what excess federal land? We hardly have any federal lands in the state of Illinois, and the Midwest is largely privately owned. Obviously, Wisconsin's got a fair number of federal lands. Upper Peninsula of Michigan does, and Minnesota. But out west, it's the big issue. It's the sagebrush rebellion reincarnated in many ways. So in states like Utah, we've got some 80% of the land owned by the federal government. Idaho, big amounts owned by the federal government. It's a different perspective. But there is definitely a desire among some leaders in Congress to sell federal lands back to the states. And what I would offer is that we ought to come up with a strategic vision for how our federal lands should be used and work that vision with the states so that we have a coherent national strategy, but it is based upon the states' desires for how the federal lands in their states should be used. I don't think, however, we should give up ownership of federal property to states which do not have the financial resources to manage them, and which ultimately may lead to those lands being sold into the private sector. And as you've listened to the show for many years, you know I'm a huge believer in the private sector. However, in this case, I think we need to try, before we would go that route as a last-ditch effort, to work with the states individually on what their objectives are to the federal lands in their state. Because once they're lost from the federal rolls, the population of America loses the ability to both financially benefit from those as well as recreationally benefit from those. And also, in some cases, we lose the ability to manage those for the good of the resources for which they, in fact, are federal lands. So the sale of federal lands should be put on hold until we really have the chance to develop a strategic vision for what federal land should look like based upon the needs of each state to have them. The needs in Illinois of the Madewin Tallgrass Prairie, for instance, or the Shawnee National Forest, are going to be very different than they are of the federal lands in the West, in Wyoming and Idaho and Utah and Nevada. But let's work with the states to try to come up with a master plan for each state before we just go and sell any lands. The second thing I think we really need to do, and this is fundamental to changing the direction of natural resource management in America, is we need to have a vision for what the Fish and Wildlife Service is supposed to be accomplishing and what each agency under the Department of Interior is supposed to be doing. We have moved away from an era where we manage our natural resources for the good of the resource and for public access to an era where we lock it up, throw away the key, and let nature just take over. That management philosophy, which first took hold in the Clinton administration, was somewhat slowed down in the Bush administration and frankly went on steroids in the Obama administration, is going to lead to the demise of many of our most prized natural resources in this country. It is going to have a huge impact on wildlife. One of the critical things that we have lost is the vision for how we manage our federal national wildlife refuges, how we manage our BLM lands, how we manage the entire landscape of national lands that are designed for two things. They are designed to provide recreation for the American people, and they are designed to provide habitat for fish and wildlife and other species. And we have seen a movement over the last really 20 years, but particularly the last 8 years, to stop managing many of our lands. We're no longer, in many cases, planting foods on our national wildlife refuges. We simply have turned them over to let, quote-unquote, nature take over and return to the way it was. Well, that is not even possible because these landscapes have been so altered. But more fundamentally, in many cases, the national wildlife refuges were acquired because of their ability to both harbor wildlife and also provide food. So if we are taking the food resource away, in the case, for instance, of waterfowl, if we are taking the food resource away from these national wildlife refuges, they no longer provide the food that waterfowl need, which was exactly why they were set up in the begin with. They were set up to provide sanctuary, and then they were managed to provide food. They're providing sanctuary today, but they're not providing the food resources they need. So we really need a fundamental approach as to what we're going to do in America with all of our public lands. And they ought to be looked at from the point of view of, are they out west? Are they in the Midwest? Are they in the Southeast? Each region has its own needs, and each region needs a specific plan for management of those lands. But fundamentally, the transition we have to make is to go back to managing these lands and not just throwing away the key and saying, let nature take care of itself. We also have to recognize that the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Interior, through its leadership over the last 20 years, has moved away from what was the fundamental reason that they existed, and that was to provide the ability for Americans to enjoy the outdoors. And today we have so many areas that are mismanaged, or they're being managed for species that frankly do not provide the kind of recreational opportunity that they once did. And in the case of so many national wildlife refuges, they've gone from being managed for waterfowl to being managed for neotropical birds and shorebirds. That was a shift that was made without the consent of the American public, and particularly without the consent of the part of the American public that pays the bills. So hopefully, in the coming months, we will see a dramatic shift to the core principles of what drove the Department of Interior to be so successful, what drove the Fish and Wildlife Service to be so respected. We have lost that respect. We have lost the focus, and it really is essential. We're running out of time. It is essential that we take a look at how we can best manage these lands, and we actively manage them, and we manage them for access for the public, and we manage them to the best possible outcome for the resources for which they were acquired to begin with. And that means when we acquired a national wildlife refuge because it was an important area for canvasback, we don't manage it today for frogs. And that's the kind of thing that are happening. Or we don't manage it for turtles. We acquired these lands because of their exceptional value, in many cases, to waterfowl. And today, the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Interior is abandoning that principle and managing them for species which, frankly, do not deliver, A, any economic benefit, and secondly, do not deliver a resource benefit, and thirdly, don't deliver a public opportunity benefit. So a thorough rebuilding of the Department of Interior is in order. When I come back from the break, I want to talk just a little bit more about what's going on at the federal level, and then I want to talk about the wolf situation, the lawsuit in the upper Midwest. But we have an opportunity in front of us here in the next year or so to see if we can bring about fundamental reforms to the management of our public lands, the Department of Interior, the Fish and Wildlife Service, and all the interior agencies, to see if we really can get back to managing these lands, as I've said, and providing for the best resource outcome and providing for the maximum public utilization. That's an important quest, and hopefully we can do it. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you're enjoying the show. And before I go to talk about wolves and what is taking place in the litigation of the delisting of wolves in the upper Midwest, I want to add one more serious thought to the situation of turning the Department of Interior around. And that is, we have to have individuals appointed to positions who have the right backgrounds so they can make the right decisions. We have seen a wholesale shift in the appointment of key positions throughout the Department of Interior and all of the agencies through which the Interior Department controls to individuals who are either politically connected or do not have the experience in the natural resource world to make the kind of decisions that are needed to advance our natural resource management. So hopefully the coming appointments, and there will be hundreds of them at the highest level, will be of individuals who are able to make decisions based upon their professional training and their personal experiences. And that means having individuals in management positions who have experience in the outdoors. And whether that means they hunt, they fish, they hike, they bike, it doesn't matter. It'd be great if the individuals who are responsible for managing hunting and fishing hunted and fished. That would be rather essential. But individuals who actually understand the outdoors instead of individuals who have a political agenda which has not been favorable. The last thing before we go to discussion of wolves is the whole thing with the Keystone Pipeline and offshore drilling. These are opportunities for conservation to make enormous gains. It is not a question of should we be doing these things, in my mind. We need to build the Keystone Pipeline. We need to drill offshore. But we can do so in such a way that the royalties that come from these and the revenues that come from these efforts go back into fulfilling the needs of conservation, natural resource management, habitat acquisition, access. This is not 1905 again. This is 2016, and we have the ability to drill and to run pipelines that are both economically feasible as well as being very, very environmentally sound. And I would offer for those individuals who don't think we should have the Keystone Pipeline, would you rather have a pipeline running the length of the country, or do you want to continue loading up trucks, tanker trucks, and running them over our interstates? Think of the gas. Think of the wear and tear on our roads. There is an environmental cost to moving energy, and we have to realize that the environmental cost of moving energy can be mitigated if we do it in the right way, but it cannot be mitigated if we continue to block these programs. So the other thing I want to talk to now is what's going on with the Endangered Species Act and wolves in particular. My feeling on the Endangered Species Act is that species should never be listed as being endangered unless there is a specific agreed-upon population goal at which it attains for it to be delisted. If we had done this, we would not have much of the litigation we have today taking place across America. Going forward, any new species listed as an endangered species needs to have a plan that says when it achieves this population level of X, it is automatically delisted. The best example I have of this in front of me today is what's going on with wolves in the upper Midwest. On October 18th, attorneys for the federal government, the Sportsmen's Alliance, the state of Michigan, and others presented their oral case on the delisting of wolves in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. In December of 2011, the Fish and Wildlife Service removed wolves from the list of endangered and threatened species for the states of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. There are lots of wolves, and those of you who are out in the outdoors know their impact right now in deer populations. Wolves have gone beyond the population goals these states set for recovery. However, the humaniacs, as I sometimes call them, the Humane Society, PETA, and other groups didn't like the delisting, and they filed a lawsuit that required the wolves to be returned to the Endangered Species Act. And yet, despite overwhelming scientific evidence that wolves are thriving in the Western Great Lakes region, a U.S. district judge ruled that until the predators were recovered throughout their entire historic range, which means from New York City to San Francisco, they could not be delisted. This is one of the most absurd legal rulings you can imagine. It undid the lower court's rulings. It undoes biology. It undoes wildlife. Undoes wildlife management. To say that if we have too many wolves now in Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota, and they need to be hunted, and their populations need to be reduced because of their impacts on other wildlife, to have a district court judge say, no, you can't do that until there are too many wolves from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific and from the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border, shows an absolute lack of understanding, not only of wildlife, but of understanding of how we have to work as a society. So now this has been appealed, this ruling. It's been joined by virtually every conservation organization that has a stake in the wolf business of trying to make sure that we have wolf populations that are healthy and sustainable, but not wolf populations that are overrunning the states and causing all kinds of wildlife issues, which they are now in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And certainly any of you who have been in the woods of northern Wisconsin know that the great increase in wolf populations, also that of bears, has had a dramatic increase in the number of white-tailed deer. So all of these things are related. And when they fall into the courts, judges are unable to understand those relationships, and they make lousy decisions such as the one that was just made. So hopefully this is overturned, but it is yet another example of why the Endangered Species Act is a very bad piece of law, in that it does not provide for automatic delisting once populations achieve certain levels. And whether that's bald eagles or wolves or condors, whatever it is, we've gotten into this mess because we didn't think about the outcomes when populations actually recover. There's a lot going on in the great outdoors, but most importantly, let's hope we all have a chance this week to get out in the great outdoors and enjoy it. Deer season's on in Illinois again this coming weekend. Be safe, and let's hope it doesn't blow 50 miles an hour again like it did last weekend. Thanks so much for listening to the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.